Everyone, this is Mark and Denise in the Mornings. I'm Denise Clay. And right now we're trying to fix some technical difficulties, but hopefully we'll be able to provide you with a show that is, you know, our usual top-notch programming here on Mark and Denise in the Mornings. Mark is in an undisclosed location. He's out of the studio right now. So right now it's just me, and we're trying to get things fixed up so that way you can hear us if you're on Facebook Live and I can hear you, because right now Donnie Deer hears me. Yay! And there's a couple of people who are, you know, I guess it's good on Facebook now. But I can't hear anything in the studio. This is the wonder good. Okay, now I can hear a little bit. Terrific. All right, awesome. Well, today we have a whole bunch of stuff coming up for you. We have Representative Dwight Evans talking about the government shutdown and the impact that's having on the American public. We also have, for those of you who may have taken some time to watch the Surviving R. Kelly documentary on Lifetime, we have one of the people who was featured in that documentary, Sparkle. She's a performer who, as it turns out, took her niece to try and get some help getting into the business with R. Kelly, and it had disastrous consequences for her and her family. She's going to be joining us at 8 o'clock today. At 8:40, it is the return of You Know It, You Love It, You Can't Do Without It, Mondays with Ernest Owens. And on the line right now to talk about how not to kick a field goal and other things having to do with sports and the Philadelphia Eagles, we have two of your favorite folks that come in and talk to us about sports every once in a while. One is Christopher Murray. He is the host of the Chris Murray Report on WURD 900 AM on Saturdays from 11 to 1. And also he's a sports columnist with the Philadelphia Sunday Sun and various other organizations. And it looks like Ikey Raw, the head of the Bang Bang Bird Gang, is also going to be joining us this morning. So good morning, gentlemen, and welcome to Mark and Denise in the Mornings.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So, Ikey, how's it feel?
Well, listen, let me just say, I know people aren't used to hearing from me until Friday, but what a beautiful morning, what a beautiful day. Bang Bang Bird Gang, the victory is ours. We have no sympathy for Cody Parkey, so for everybody who say, oh, what a shame. No, we have no sympathy. He used to kick for us. That's why we got rid of him. We're going on to see the Saints next Sunday, so everybody who bleeds green just like me, it's our week. Go to work today. Antagonize your coworkers. Wear your green. Be proud. Be happy. It's our week. Let's do it. Good morning, Ms. Denise Clay. Good morning, Mark Tyler. Good morning to all the listeners. Bang Bang Bird Gang.
Good morning. Well, Chris, you know, you saw this, you saw the game yesterday. In fact, Chris and I were in Washington Redskins country watching this game, which was its own brand of funny. But talk a little bit about the I guess, kind of the X's and O's, the back and forth.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, but the thing in this game, you knew it was going to be a defensive struggle because the Bears are what they thought I were. The Bears are what I thought they were. And kind of bad thing with Dennis Green, but the Bears had a good defense, but Mr. Trubisky is an average quarterback at best. I thought, but he did make some plays down the stretch in that game and put them in field goal position. But I thought the Eagles toughed this one out. And Nick Foles, when it comes down to crunch time, he brought that team through. Fourth down from the 1-yard line against the pass to Golden Tate, and there was your game winner. But the Eagles had the issues moving the football against that defense. That's one of the best defenses I think they'll face during this playoff situation. And but they got to be able to keep up with the New Orleans Saints offense that can put points on the board left and right. And but I think the Eagles will play a lot better the second time seeing that offense. And so we'll see. And I would say that Jimmy Schwartz once again did a good job of working with a relatively inexperienced secondary. And again, they limited the team to under 20 points.
Wow.
Right, absolutely. That's the first thing we take away. The Chicago Bears defense, that's definitely going to be the best defense that we face throughout the playoffs. Now, next week when we play the Saints, Avante Maddox, our cornerback, yesterday he kept biting on the double moves, but I think they're going to work with him this week to have him more prepared. So next week, look for the Saints not to put up as many points as they did first time, putting up over 40 points playing it. So I think we can hang in there next week and get the victory, you know, in New Orleans.
Mark? Did you have a question?
This question is going to be about what are you guys going to do with Nick Foles next season? We already know what he's going to say. If Nick Foles wins the Super Bowl, goes back to the Super Bowl, what are you guys going to do, Ikey? Come on, Rev. I know. Come on.
You know it. Pay the man. You got to pay
the man. Well, he's due over $20 million next year on his salary. I mean, all we have to do is bring him back next year. He's due over $20 million. We can have him for 1 year for over, say, $20 million. That's a good pay. A lot of teams in the league, well, I'm not going to say a lot. Every team in the league would love to be in our situation. You have a quarterback who we keep saying is our future, and we have another quarterback who seems to keep winning in the playoffs. So, hey, I'll take it.
Well, from that standpoint, I'm going to say this. I don't think Nick Foles wants to be in a situation where he's going to be a backup. I mean, it's ideal for him, but he wants to go. I still think he believes, to be a starting quarterback in this league. That's going to be interesting to see how, you know, they're going to have to make a deal sweet enough to convince him to stay. And but there is question, though, about Carson Wentz in the sense that can he stay healthy? I mean, that's an interesting dilemma for the Eagles, and how they solve that is going to be pretty much going to determine how they're going to go for the next few years. But make no mistake, Wentz is the future, but he has to stay healthy, too. And he has a history dating back to his days at North Dakota State of injury. So that's a huge question mark for the Eagles. How long are they going to stay with Carson Wentz, given his injury history?
Hey, Chris. Yeah,
absolutely.
Hey, Chris, I got a question for
sir.
You.
Yeah.
So how crazy would it be if this thing shapes up? I know it's unlikely because two of these teams are on the road, but how crazy would it be if the AFC and NFC championships came down to two division rivalries? If it was the Chargers and the Chiefs and the Cowboys and the Eagles?
It can happen, and I believe it's a distinct possibility, because I think that in the NFL it is hard to beat a team twice, especially if you're talking about the case of the Eagles and the Saints. I think that the Eagles make some adjustments, because I've seen it too many times. I remember back in 2012, the San Diego Padres, Denver Broncos Peyton Manning.
Oh, Peyton Manning.
Basically, they blasted the Ravens in Baltimore by a huge score. I mean, it was like 40-something to 13 or something like that. Then Baltimore comes back in Denver to beat Peyton Manning in overtime in that famous, you know, the Rocky Mountain Rainbow play at the end of the game and end of regulation. So things can change in that short period of time. I think that the Eagles defensively have improved. I'm not saying that they're going to completely shut down New Orleans, but I think that the Eagles play a lot better with Nick Foles as quarterback, and I think he can attack that defense and turn that game into a close game. And the only thing they need to do is make the game close. So I think that the Eagles can win that game. I think Dallas can go in and beat Los Angeles. The two favorite teams, the two top seeded teams in the NFC, are not invincible. They can be beat, and that's a distinct possibility that the Cowboys and the Eagles can meet in the NFC Championship and be played in Dallas, because Dallas is a division winner.
All right. Well, listen, hey, fellas, we don't normally talk sports this early in the week, but we had to do it today. We got to let you out of here. But, Ikey, I want to let you know that you were pretty close. Your prediction was 23-17. It was 16-15. That's not too bad. I don't know anything about the spread. But I think that's probably close within it. So can we get one bang bang before we get out of here?
Bang bang, Bird Gang. See y'all Friday, and we definitely will see you Sunday in New Orleans. Drew Brees, here we come.
All right. Take care, Ikey Raw and Chris Murray. You guys have a good day.
Yes, thank you.
All right, y'all have a good one.
Denise, we got another Eagles fan on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's happy. He's probably down in D.C. just bragging, chest stuck out. He's the congressman from Philadelphia. Congressman Dwight Evans, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning to both of you. But yeah, there is no question, you know, even with this chaos going on in Washington, D.C., we sort of need the mental break of what's taking place here and the Eagles. I mean, they really give people some sense of hope of what is possible. Even when anybody's counting them out, they really show what is possible when people work together. And they have demonstrated that, you know, all of the players, all the people on the field, they have demonstrated that, hey, we can make a difference, and they have shown that. So I'll share with you that absolutely I'm looking forward to next Sunday as we continue to attempt to make that march. And shock an awful lot of people. I mean, as you know, Philadelphia had been counted out consistently. The Eagles have been counted out. Well, that's, you know, don't count this city out. There's a lot of good people here in this city, and we're determined to make a difference. So absolutely, I congratulate the Eagles.
Yeah, so Congressman, while we have you this morning, thanks for calling. The president in the shutdown, he is now saying that he has the ability and the authority to declare a national emergency and order the U.S. military, I guess who's coming back from Syria, to actually build this wall. What kind of legal standing does he have on this? What's the conversation? I know you all have lawyers down there talking to you about it. Can that actually happen?
Well, before we even talk about that, the one thing I always want to keep in mind is the 800,000 people being affected. While this discussion is going on, there is the issue with people with food stamps, in the IRS, people doing jobs. I mean, I think what has happened, and I don't have to tell you, with all this debate is, this is about people, and we should always remind people that this is, even though we wrangle and go through these debates, from the things that have been expressed to me, the answer is no, 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 he does not have the ability to do it. Because what basically will happen, it'll wind up in court, and then that, again, impedes the ability of those 800 people. I'm going to keep going back to these people because, you know, rather than him accept what took place when the Senate, you know, a couple of weeks ago passed a resolution and unanimous, he has yet to take that up. He doesn't want to take that up. But I also say that the Republican leadership has some responsibility in this, because the way the Constitution is written, we are co-equal bodies. He is not the dictator. So I keep bringing that up to remind people, because tomorrow I'm going to be at a rally tomorrow around Independence Hall with workers tomorrow morning around 10:30 before I go back to Washington with the workers, the people who are mostly being affected. I don't want to ever forget people every single day out here who are having a difficult time, having anxieties, trying to figure out, you know, am I getting a paycheck? Am I not getting a paycheck? And this gamesmanship, because that's what it is. You know, most people look at this as a game, I mean, you know, that's being played by this president. But it really says something, Mark, relating to what we have looked towards to the future, why elections are important, why it is important to be organized, why it's important not to give up. So I guess what my thing is this morning is he will be fought on that front, you know, if he goes in that direction. I would hope he would not go in that direction, and I would hope the legislative process, you know, is the place that he would go. But obviously, he doesn't think he has to go to the legislative process. He really doesn't think he has to do that. But, you know, the fact is that we are here. We are in charge of the House. And he just can't arbitrarily spend money where he wants to spend to, even if we don't agree with him.
Well, Congressman Evans, because you mentioned the 800,000 people that are impacted by this. Is there anything that folks in the House are trying to do to help these people until a legislative fix can be made here? Or you know, are you hearing about, like, efforts from, say, some of the unions that these employees work for to try and help things?
I think Denise, right now, my office has been talking to the unions. We're going to be getting together with them tomorrow morning in terms of putting things together first. Secondly, we are in the House starting tomorrow. We passed the package of bills last week, Thursday, when we were sworn in. We passed the package that is in the Senate. Now what we're going to do is do that package individually on each of the departments. I mentioned to you the Treasury Department specifically because of the conversation around the impact that it will have on people's refunds who are receiving refunds from the Internal Revenue. That is an issue that we are attempting. So it's four bills we're going to do this week. One with financial services, agriculture, interior, and transportation. Those are the four areas. But it's the implications. It's contract with businesses. So to your question is that basically what we attempt to do, we also are putting language in the bill that says these people should receive their money. So we're putting language in the bill that says, you know, once we pass that, the money they have lost, they should receive their money. So we're putting that in the bill. We're going to do the vote of bill. We're going to be doing these rallies. We're doing everything that is absolutely humanly possible. As a matter of fact, I personally have said to myself that I'm not taking a salary as long as this is going on. So I'm sharing with you that we are collectively, individually, everybody's trying to figure out every way to break this logjam and to keep in mind that the people who are being affected by this. That's what I always want to get back to. I always want to get back to the people who are being affected every single day and trying to figure out what's going to happen. And, you know, particularly when you have a president who says he doesn't care how many months or years that it takes. When he sends that kind of message, you're really talking about somebody who's anti-people, anti-worker. I mean, this is a really anti-attitude for what he's saying. And it's the reason why we're using every bit of skill set that we have, you know, politically raising the consciousness of people. Because I don't take this lightly personally. I just think, look, I went through this kind of stuff in Harrisburg, and the union sued the state. I would encourage the union to sue the federal government. The same way the union sued the state in Harrisburg, they won that case. The union won, and we in the state could no longer hold the workers hostage. Well, I encourage the union to do the same thing. Sue the federal government. There's no way you can have people working and not being paid. There's no one who's in your listening audience who would go to work and not be paid. That is not acceptable. Because this president lives in public housing. He lives in public housing, right? That is being paid for. He's not sacrificing giving up his public housing. It's public transportation.
Right.
She's not giving that up.
Congressman Evans, I have so all of this is serious, but I want to take it to a different place in the conversation. We got about 5 minutes, and I hope you can address this.
Sure.
So TSA, they're not being paid. And unlike people who are in the military, who've gone through years of training, who would be out, I mean, soldiers, they're going to fight no matter what. A lot of these folk, I'm not trying to downgrade what they do, but it's not the same level of personal investment. And I've got to imagine that if you're at work at TSA and you're not being paid, you're having all kind of side conversations with other TSA agents about how pissed you are and angry you are. Are we jeopardizing air travel safety right now? I fly a lot, so I this has been on my mind, if they're not being paid.
Well, look, I would say we're jeopardizing any situation that particularly when a human being is not sure, because that would be any one of us, exactly what is happening. Now, everybody, these people are very professional, okay? So I don't want to ever question their motives. They're very professional in what they do. But they're still human. And when you hear the President of the United States saying this could be months or years. What kind of attitude? How do you treat your workers that way? That doesn't make any sense. That just doesn't. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no rhyme or reason to treat people that way.
Hey, Congressman, Denise is always famous for reminding us that he's got a history of not paying his workers.
Exactly. There are several companies in New Jersey that could tell you that he's not big on paying his workers. But I kind of wanted to clarify something that you said, Congressman. A bill has to be passed for these folks to get back pay?
Yes, a bill has to be passed. And then we're putting language in the bill that makes sure that they are being paid. We want to ensure. We put the difference in the bill we passed last week. We passed the bill last week as a package to do all of it. This time we're bringing up the four individual bills. We're putting language in the bill to make sure that they receive their pay. So we want no question from this administration about these people receiving their salaries. So when you ask the question specifically, first, we got to make sure that they get paid and repaid. That's the first thing. Secondly, we got to keep the pressure on. So, Mark, when you raised the point about safety, the fact is, yes, these are very professional people, and none of them would say they're not trying to be professional. But we are human beings. If you talk about paying bills, buying a house, paying rent, the rent people, the mortgage people, no one's going to suddenly turn around and suddenly say, well, that's not my problem, that's your problem.
Right.
That's your problem. So if you do the multiplying fact of 800,000 people, there's no one. That's why I said even if all members of Congress, all members of the House and Senate, you know, we need to understand the same impact. Because remember something. Hey, Mark, I volunteered for this job, and I'm fortunate enough people elected me. But my workers shouldn't have to go through the same thing I have to go through. They shouldn't have to go through. If the battle the president won, battle with just members of Congress and the Senate, but not the workers. Do not battle with the workers, okay? Allow the workers to be removed. These are 800,000 citizens. If this was in a country and we did something like that, they held this many people hostage, there would be a war. There would be an absolute war if this many people were held hostage. That's exactly. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not stretching it. That you try to explain to a household which is not sure that they are knowing when their income is coming in and they got their decision. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't care what rhyme or reason he thinks. He is not king. He is elected like I'm elected. He's not king of the United States of America.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Congressman. As we run up on the break, one of our Facebook listeners, Jackie DuPont Walker out in California, made the point this morning to remind everyone that he's trying to claim kingship. And it seems that seems to be where he's going. But I don't think Speaker Pelosi and the Congress is going to have that.
Well, that you can see very clear that we collectively are not going to have that. We're going to stay relentless. We're going to be at this every single day. We're not giving up. And I appreciate you and Denise and your listening audience. Look, I don't mind giving a report every single day, because I'm going to be on top of this every single day and let people know that I'm not resting until, first and foremost, these people get their money. So get their money out. Once you get that settled, then we can have this debate on border security, border walls, immigration. I don't have a problem with that debate, because you and I had a conversation, Mark, a couple weeks ago about the border with the family separation and what took place with those young people. You and I talked about that a couple weeks ago, and I plugged into one of my colleagues who's out there on the border. So it's not like we're fearful of the debate, but do not use citizens, American citizens, or any citizen of any particular country as hostages. That's how dangerous this person is in the White House. He's using any technique that he thinks will get the attention. And basically, you hear his attitude. He speaks about these citizens as being Democrats. They don't care. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous that we have a president who basically, for all intent purposes, don't give a damn about the constituent. Because when we take that oath, we have to be concerned, no matter if a person voted for you or didn't vote for you, we ought to be concerned about the citizens.
All right. Well, Congressman Evans, listen, you guys have a big week ahead of you. Let's hope that we can get this resolved quickly, because as you said, it's one thing for us, you know, to sit around like pundits and just talking Correct. About it. But you're right. Somebody out there, it was counting on that check for their rent, for food, for tuition, for just the basic necessities of life. And they don't deserve that after they worked for us. So thank you, Congressman. Much success to you this week.
Thank you again. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Congressman Dwight Evans, man. We got to take a quick station identification break. When we come back, we're waiting on a phone call from Sparkle. You remember her? Remember the song, Be Careful? Back in 98, we'll play a little bit of that to jog your memory. She was also on the Surviving R. Kelly docuseries. Whew, Denise, I tried to get through some more of that this weekend, and it was hard. I couldn't do it.
I didn't see the last two parts, but Chris did last night, and when he, you know, came to bed, he's like, I now understand why women don't report.
That's the, yeah, I tried to watch a part of episode 5, and it was just, it was a little too heavy. So, listen, we'll be right back on the other side of this break. Okay. Hey, Denise.
Hey.
You know, I think that the technical issues that we're having this morning is because somebody from Chicago stuck in our studio and just screwed everything up because they're, like, really upset.
It could be.
Man, how mad would you be if you were from Chicago right now?
Well, considering that, you know, you had to deal with R. Kelly and Bad Place Kicking all in one weekend, you're probably wow. not very happy.
Hey, listen, Khalil Mack was sitting over there, head in his hand, and I'm thinking, like, dude, you have nothing to cry about. You could still be in Oakland.
Exactly.
Just, you know, move on, bruh. Trust me. You want to see tears, go to the Raiders locker room right now.
Every time I see Khalil Mack in a Browns uniform, or I see Amari Cooper in a Bears uniform, I see Amari Cooper playing for the Cowboys, I am reminded of just how stupid John Gruden is.
Oh, it was a big weekend for the Raiders, except they weren't in it. You know, Michael Crabtree killing it in Baltimore, bringing them back almost to win. Janikowski with the Seahawks. I mean, everywhere I looked around, I was reminded of John Gruden and Mark Davis. And I just tell you, I couldn't hide from it. Could not hide from it. So, yeah, I tell you, what a crazy day. One of the stories that we didn't get a chance to, while we're waiting on Sparkle to call in, to talk to Congressman Evans about, Denise, is the new congressman, the new congresswoman, excuse me, who made some comments that conservative media is just eating up. And they're just, everybody's clutching their pearls because she said that they're going to impeach Donald Trump, but used an expletive. But it's a word that he's used before publicly.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. And I'm like, you know, first of all, you're asking for one side of people to be civil yeah. when the person that you're demanding we be civil to does not have a civil bone in their body.
And as somebody pointed out, Kanye West used that word mm-hmm. when he was in the Oval Office with them and he laughed about it. It was like funny. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden it's so offensive that her mother should be ashamed of her. She's disgusting.
Wow, somebody actually said her mother should be ashamed of her? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But they've said worse. I mean, that's kind of minor.
That is minor.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm like, the hypocrisy in this request is what I find most amazing.
Yeah. I mean, hypocrisy is an understatement here. And yeah, so she has not apologized. She's not backed off of it. And I got to tell you, so I will say this about Pelosi. And I think that for me, I'm happy. I think it's worked out well because I think that you were right to have somebody who knows the job day one is bearing out. Who knew that we'd be starting with a shutdown? So I think that your point about wanting to return to someone who knows the job is well taken. But I am glad that she has agreed that, you know, in 4 years she will not seek the speakership again and that there will be a transition. But Pelosi just had a, I mean, you know, she covered her. She was like, look, I mean, hey, he said worse. Pelosi was like, what do you want me to say? You know, no, we're not even going to fall for that fight, for that bait. We're going to stick to this issue of the shutdown and the 800,000 people. 800,000. Listen, I would like to think, Denise, that the preaching that I do on Sundays is not impacted by my pay, that I'm a professional, that I would do it no matter what. But I got to tell you, maybe 3 months into preaching and still not getting paid because my officers can't work something out. I don't know. The sermons might get shorter. They might become angrier in tone. I would just really like to think I'm not that guy, but to make somebody work for you and then not pay them. And I mean, so if that's me, a preacher, you, a journalist, I'm telling you, I am really concerned about the safety of air travel in this country as this thing carries on. And I know Congressman Evans was very, he's a congressman, so he has to say certain things the way he kind of talked about TSA, but I've gone through TSA lines. Mm-hmm. And some of the folk in there are not as committed to it as other people. And if you don't pay them, some of these folk are just not going to be tuning in to our security.
No, because they're like, why? Because one of the stories that I read that kind of, you know, brought home just how problematic this whole shutdown is going to be is, like, apparently in the federal prison system, they have like gourmet meals for inmates over the holidays, like really nice stuff, surf and turf and, you know, different things like that. They had the meals were already scheduled. So they fed these federal inmates these really, you know, like Cornish game hen and lobster tails and, you know, dessert trays and everything. And you know why they did it, because, you know, it's supposed to make morale better in the prisons. But you had these people who were not getting paid that had to sit there and watch as these inmates were eating these high end dinners. And some of the inmates were like, oh, look, you know, they were giving their their jailers the business because of this, because, you know, well, look at me, I'm sitting here and I'm in jail and I'm having this, you know, sirloin steak, and you don't know whether or not you're going to be able to feed your family at all because the government shut down. And I'm like, okay, this is the kind of thing that's going to get somebody, you know, in trouble. This is going to cause a problem. And yeah. The very people that you want to continue to work for you, despite the fact that they're not getting paid, and most of them are mandatory and have to, you know, continue to work. I'm like, you didn't think this out. But then again, you know, you could say you didn't think this out from 90% of what Donald Trump does.
Ah, boy. I tell you, this is a real mess. And now the guy is saying this could go on for days, weeks, months. He even said the word years. I mean, he does. I mean, again, you know, so his base is telling him that this is playing well. Keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, because it's working with the base. The problem is that's about 33-36% of the country. And the vast majority of the country is not happy with this and should not be happy with it. And his base shouldn't be happy with it. You know,
what I don't understand is that how can your base be happy with it when this is mostly your base? It's your base that's not working. It's your base that's got to figure out how it's going to pay its bills. These are the people who, you know, rely on you.
Listen, I was thinking about his base, all those folk down on the border. If he ever gets the money for the wall and approval for it, you know they're going to have to use eminent domain to take property. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be ironic? The people who fought for him in the wall to get their property taken. That would be somewhat poetic justice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. And the thing is, they'd have no one but themselves to blame for this. I mean, I'd feel bad because I feel bad when people don't have what they need. But I can't feel as bad when you brought this on yourself.
Wow. Well, listen, we are waiting for Sparkle from... she was actually a part of R. Kelly. She was in episode 2. So waiting to hear from her. And while we wait to hear from her, Denise, there were a couple of other stories this week that I thought, based on what we talk about a lot, deserved a little bit of attention. Mm-hmm. And the AP released a story over the weekend out of Milwaukee. And it's the headline reads, "Police confront two men, one white, one black, only one is shot."
Oh.
All right. I know you like to do a little wager every now and then. Which one do you think, Denise?
I ain't got betting shot on that because, quite frankly, I don't have the money to lose.
All right, I'll bet you cookies. Because you can bake cookies. No, you would be right if you went with your gut instinct. You would be absolutely right. The black guy was shot, and the white guy was not. This is over the period of 15 months, and this was in the same neighborhood. The police had an encounter with two different suspects. Again, one white and one black. The black guy ended up being shot. The white guy was apprehended with no shots fired. Here's the part that you might find interesting. The black guy who was shot, he was unarmed. Had no gun. And the entire encounter that led to him being shot took about 10 seconds. All of 10 seconds. The white guy, who was not shot but apprehended safely, was rocking an AR-15 and three loaded handguns, one in his waistband, one in his backpack, one in his jacket. But they talked him down, got the gun, tackled him, got the gun away from him, and took him in without shooting him. Mm. Same city. A block away from each other within a 15-month period. It's an excellent story in the AP. I'm trying to find out who wrote. Oh, Ivan Moreno. Maybe we can get him on at some point to talk about this story. But I think it illustrates and highlights so much of what we talk about. I mean, from the small microaggressions of trying to barbecue while being black, or wait for an Uber while being black, or going to the swimming pool and you're harassed because you don't have the right things on, but other people don't and they don't get harassed, up to the most violent confrontations that can lead to death. Now, fortunately for the black guy, he was not killed. He's partially paralyzed. They said he'll need some kind of help walking, but he survived it and he's suing. But I mean, does that not illustrate in real time so many of these stories kind of wrapped into these two encounters?
Hmm. It just, well, first of all, you know, if you're a police officer and you can't bring people in without shooting them, then, you know, that tells me you need some additional training anyway. But second of all, if somebody has somebody is walking around with an AK, they're the dangerous person, not the unarmed guy.
Right. So he's got an AR. He's got an AR-15, and somehow they bring my man in. They sneak up behind him while two distract him in the front, and they come and they tackle him. And they take the gun away from him, and they take him to jail.
Hmm.
The black guy, on the other hand, they encounter for less than, for like 10 seconds, less than half a minute, And their question, they got all this on body cam. They're actually asking the question, does he have a gun? Does he have a gun? Does he have a gun? Well, hell, let's not take a chance. He is black.
Mm-hmm.
And you're shot, and nobody can definitively say they saw a gun because there was no gun. An AR-15, and you get to survive the stop. Nothing. The black guy had his hands out with palms up and shot. What? I mean, I don't have to, I'm asking a rhetorical question now. What does that say? I already know what it says. I mean, are you kidding me? Is that what it's come to? Apparently so. But Denise, maybe we can find Ivan Moreno. It's an excellent story. And in so many ways, talks about this moment. The other story that I thought deserved a little of attention, especially in light of what we're talking about. And hopefully we can get Sparkle on. We have an all kind of problem with Lifetime and
I know. And the thing is, this was confirmed on Friday. This was confirmed
Don't worry about
on
it.
Friday. Now I'm a little annoyed.
It's okay. But did you see, we talked about this guy recently in the last few months. And I was already suspect about him because of his texting back and forth with a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think we can firmly put him over in the category with R. Kelly.
Oh, you mean Drake?
Oh, yeah. My daughters, don't ask me for tickets to see Drake. Nothing. Don't ask to go see Drake because it's not going to happen. Did you see the video of this guy, of Drake?
No, I missed that. I missed that.
Okay. It's very disturbing. And, all right. So Drake brings a young girl up on the stage during a concert.
Mm-hmm.
This is what artists do all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but she's very young. And when he asks her what's her age, she says she's 17. Now, at this point, Denise, what should happen?
Well, for one thing, you shouldn't be feeling her up.
I'm just, so at this point, it should be over, right? It's like, oops, mm-hmm. my bad, 17, come back, later. Let's get her off the stage, get her some nice paraphernalia, some t-shirts, whatever, thanks for supporting the show. God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
No, Drake doesn't stop there. Drake says, I can't go to jail yet, man. That might be somewhat prophetic, huh?
Yeah. I mean,
I can't go to jail yet.
It could be surviving Drake next.
just saying. So then Drake then says to her, why do you look like that? Well, look, I had fun. I don't know whether I should feel guilty or not, but I had fun. Like the way you're. Hold on. Earmuffs if you got kids in the car. I like the way your breasts feel against my chest. I just want to thank you.
I can't this then, morning. I simply cannot.
Drake then kisses her face several times again before, as the article says, on the grapevine and the root, before bidding her adieu. Man, Drake is... I don't even know how you even. She said she's 17. That should be the end of it. But you keep going. And this is, Denise, this is what he does in public with the whole world watching and videotaping. I don't know whether I should feel guilty or not. Yes.
No, let me answer this. See, let me just give a rule of thumb to the men in the audience. Pick a musical performer from your generation who was really, really big, but is not as big now. The rule of thumb that you should, and I'm going to pass this on to women too, because, you know, some of us are out here chicken hawking as well, but let me help you out. If you have to explain, I mean, like completely and totally explain your favorite musical artist growing up to the person you are about to ask out on a date, they are too young for you. For example, if I'm having a conversation with a young man, which I'm not going to do because I'm engaged and that would cause a scandal of some sort. But if I were not engaged and I were at a club and I was talking to somebody that I had to explain, say, Stevie Wonder to, you are too young for me. I can't be bothered. If I have to explain Live 8 or Live Aid or why, if U2 is at all in town, that's where you can find me. If I have to explain any of those things to you and you want to take me out, you are too young. I am walking away. And that should be the rule.
Who Stevie Wonder is.
Exactly. If you got to, I mean, there was this song by Steely Dan called Hey 19. And one of the lines in the song was, Hey 19, that's Aretha Franklin. She don't remember the Queen of Soul. If that is the person that you are talking to, if the person you are talking to has to be explained why Aretha Franklin was important or who Stevie Wonder is or who the Rolling Stones are, if any of those things qualify, they are too young for you. If you're a 90s baby and you have to explain who Whitney Houston was, that person is too young. Just... No, don't do this to yourselves. Just don't.
Drake.
And the thing all of the people that you would expect to be out here chicken hawking, Drake was at the bottom of the list because he was seen as universally corny.
If you can't trust light-skinned dudes from Canada, who can you trust?
Exactly. The world has gone.
I'm just saying.
It's gone, you know, it's in a bucket now. It's terrible.
Yeah, hey, my mother-in-law's right. She just posted on Facebook Live, surviving the Catholic Church. Right. I mean, you know, you can't trust priests, preachers. I mean, I think the point is that you can't look at someone and tell that a person is trustworthy in this way or not. You just can't.
No.
Right. I mean, I think we know this by now. So at least we should know this by now. So as parents, you have to take caution. I mean, that's we asked the question last week talking about surviving R. Kelly. Where were the parents? Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about really some gut wrenching stuff, watching some of these parents try to get their kids from R. Kelly in the last few years. Some of these young girls. Some of the young women now who went there as young girls at 17 and started living with him. Now, mind you, I need to put the disclaimer. He has denied all of this. He says these are all lies and fabrications. But that's the only statement. So we only have their side of it. But these parents who've gone, some of them have actually tried, you know, to get their kids back. But Drake. Drake pulling 17-year-olds on stage, knowing they're 17, kissing on their face. Talking about their body parts felt good on his. Bruh. Man, wait for it. Yeah, no. Initially, Aunt Young is right. He did not know how old she was initially. But when he found out she was 17, everything that I said came after he knew she was 17. So, yes, that's what's so disturbing. You already know you got this stuff in your past that's been out about you texting and being in communication in a weird way with a teenager, the young lady from one of my favorite Netflix shows. I can't think of the name of the show right now, but the group of kids who, you know, it's like in the 70s, but he's texting this young girl. They're just quote unquote friends. Bruh, let me tell you, I said it before when we brought this up before. Anybody over 18 texting one of my daughters who are 15 and 14, you might not want to do that. And certainly not in your late 20s or 30s as a global star. But, you know, this reinforces it. So I don't, you know, I suspect we'll be hearing more from Drake soon.
But here's the thing, you know, I would think that with this documentary coming out and with R. Kelly being in the news like that, that any of the chicken hawks that are out here chicken hawking would say, you know something, maybe I got to, you know, put my chasing chicks my daughter's age thing on hold indefinitely and go out here and try to talk to some women my own age.
Yeah. thanks. Denny White reminds me of the name of the show, which is ironic. Stranger Things.
Yeah, yeah. That's the young lady from the Netflix show, Stranger Things.
Yeah, it is Stranger Things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Denise, let me just say this before I forget, because we didn't do it at the top of the show. That the show is brought to you by Power, Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild. And you can learn more about Power at powerinterfaith.org. Power, along with others from the MLK DARE Coalition, Day of Action, Resistance, and Empowerment, will be holding an annual event. It's going to be a teach-in style. It'll be held at Bible Way Baptist Church on the 21st of this month from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll be talking more about that as we go forward. And also on this coming Sunday at 4 p.m. at Mount Airy Church of God in Christ, the annual MLK celebration by the Black clergy of Philadelphia and vicinity will take place at Mount Airy Church of God in Christ on Ogontz. The preacher is retired AME Bishop John Bryant. If you never heard him, trust me, it'll be worth your time going out, and I'm sure he'll have a great message this year because, boy, if we ever need to be reminded of the legacy of the struggle, we certainly need it right now. Before we get to Ernest Owens in about 10 minutes, Denise, there's another story that I just had to read. You would love this. I thought when I saw this, I saved this because I was like, Denise is really going to like it. It's from your friend Tucker Carlson.
See, you went wrong right there.
Listen, you're going to like this. Liberated black woman that you are. Uh-huh. Tucker Carlson. I wouldn't believe it if I didn't actually see him say it, but he actually said this. He's making a point about, it's kind of a backdoor way of saying that income equality is bad for us. Because it destroys families. So if women get the same as men, or God forbid, more than men, it's really bad for families.
Let's keep it real. There are a whole bunch of families right now because of this government shutdown that would be in much, much worse shape if the women weren't working.
Okay. Well, here's his quote. Study after study. This is Tucker Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
Fox News. I put that in air quotes.
Which means research was not really actually done, but do go on.
Study after study has shown that when men make less than women, women generally don't want to marry them. Maybe they should want to marry them, but they don't. Over big populations, this causes a drop in marriage, a spike in out-of-wedlock births, and all the familiar disasters that inevitably follow. More drug and alcohol abuse, higher incarceration rates, fewer families formed in the next generation. Tucker Carlson.
Well, first of all, I don't know who ties his bow ties, but they're tying them too tight because it's cutting off the circulation to his brain. And second of all, every last statistic that he just threw out has been disproven by just about everybody. I mean, women are not necessarily as predisposed to marrying for money as Tucker Carlson likes to think we are. I mean, otherwise there would be no male journalists getting married. There were absolutely no male journalists at all getting married because we're all broke. And you know, and the thing is, you sit there and you listen to stuff like that and you're like, the 1950s called, they want their attitudes back. And most importantly, you know, are you married? Because, I mean, you work at Fox and I'm sure they're paying you a fat salary. So are you married? And if you're not married, maybe, and I'm just stretching here, maybe it's because you run around with patriarchal attitudes like that that basically blame the entire collapse of Western civilization on women being able to assert themselves.
Yeah.
And I hate it when people do that because it shows that they don't know what they're talking. It shows that they want an America that only existed in, you know, that didn't exist, you know, anywhere other than on television and in their minds.
One of our listeners on Facebook wants to know how I knew that. Do I watch Fox? Yes, I watch it for you. The sacrifice that
he
we make for
it
you all.
So you don't, we do it so you don't have to.
Are you kidding? Yes, we do it. We watch these things and we have to listen to this stuff for you. Don't tell me we don't love what we do. Don't tell me we're not all in. Listen to Tucker Carlson. I spared you because I actually had the clip queued up. Dan could have played it. You could have heard it in his voice. But I at least spared you so you didn't have to hear his voice. I did the interpretation for you. Soften the blow, so to speak. Tucker Carlson. So, alcoholic men, it's not your fault. If you're hooked on drugs, it's your woman's fault for coming home with a bigger paycheck.
Although blame you are her. Using part of that bigger paycheck to get better liquor.
Yeah, it did take you to top shelf.
Yeah, I mean, you were drinking Ripple there for a minute. Now you can afford Gentleman Jack. So, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game, you know?
But
you sit there sometimes, and if there is nothing else that's consistent about Fox News, it is consistent in that there is a group of men who get in front of, and women too, who get in front of live microphones and blame modernity for everything. Anything that is at all modern or has made people even somewhat equal or have anything like that is to blame for, you know, the world falling down around your ears, when what's actually to blame is this perception on your part that you are owed something when you're not. And I think that part of the reason why the women's equality movement, you know, the movement for LGBT equality, the movements for equality for people of color have so angered the Fox News crowd is because that made you had to compete. Back when it was assumed that everything was going to go directly to you and everybody else would have to fight for their little piece of the pie, which got smaller and smaller, you know, as time went on, it was okay for you to think about this, you know, about an idea of modernity that required you to compete because you didn't have to actually compete. But now that you have to actually compete, it's become a problem.
Oh.
And because you're not always going to win. You're going to find that there are people who are women, people who are LGBT, people who are people of color, people who are differently abled, and all of that stuff, who not only can compete with you, but can beat you and beat you consistently, sometimes without even breaking a sweat. And because you know that that competition is putting your dominance to an end, you sit there and you say stupid things like, you know, if women didn't work or weren't paid equally, we wouldn't have all these problems. Like I said, there are people right now who, because of this government shutdown that was put together by the person you elected, a person who has never met a bill he is going to pay ever, because you put this person in office and now the government is shut down, there are a whole lot of families that are really right now jumping up and down and dancing a jig because the woman is working and she is making good money, because that's the only thing that stands between them and homelessness and having to stand on the corner singing for money, da-da-dee, da-da-da. You know, I don't want to hear it.
Oh, boy. I mean, these views, you know, I mean, these are the views that that lead to much deeper problems, you know, domestic violence and worse. You know, when you let these views kind of go out and carry out to their logical end, they don't end in a good place. They don't end in a good place. Let me just say, you know, for the record, I mean, bruhs, it's not that deep. And in fact, when you've been married for a long time, you go through cycles, right? I mean, it's just kind of how life is. You know, there have been times where I've made more than Leslie. She's made more than me. But we have a family. So, our money is our money. It's for our families, for our family to do better. I mean, don't get hung up on the small things, you know, brethren. Don't become addicted to drugs because your wife makes more than you. It's not worth it.
Even though you get better drugs.
Well, that's true.
Well, like I said, you go from Ripple to Gentleman Jack because your wife is working. I mean,
you get to go from that rut gut vodka to Tito's, huh?
Yeah, you go from the stuff that you wouldn't cook with to the stuff that you would cook with. Maker's Mark. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, step your game up. Oh, man, this is just, yeah. All right, well, Tucker Carlson, I just want to say you're welcome because, you know, I took time to listen to that for all of you. We suffer for you because we love you like that. So we'll try to figure out what's going on with Lifetime and with Sparkle, and we'll try again tomorrow and give them one more shot. I know that they're all in demand right now, but we do want to hear from somebody associated with the project, and I'm going to try to get through the rest of that sometime today, Denise. It's very difficult, though. Listen, right now, as promised, it is Monday, so it's time for Mondays with Ernest. Dan, cue the music.
Good morning, Ernest. How are you?
Good. How are you all?
Not bad, not bad. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I really do.
So yeah,
this has been a really great year so far. We've been doing some work. At least I have.
Okay. All right.
Awesome. So, you know, I don't know where to start. It's been a crazy first week of 2019, but you know, one of the things I've been reflecting on and just looking at, just in Philadelphia and just, you know, I mean, this R. Kelly stuff, this Mummer stuff. And I just, you know, it's easy, you know, to like, you know, go after and talk about, you know, the same systemic problems that we face. And then I have to start looking at the people who are complicit with it and who needs to do something. And it was on my mind last night. I was talking to one of my friends, and I just, you know, across the board, I just want to tell black men, be a hero.
Okay, you know, when you say be a hero, what do you mean?
Be a hero. And what I mean by that is, you know, there are too many of us who are complicit in looking and defending the type of stuff that happens and impacts other people in our community. And the way in which we as a collective, you know, and I don't got time for the I'm the good man. It's about looking at those friends of yours who you see on your social media who are doing the wrong thing. And it's about not letting them just get away with that. I went to the barbershop over the weekend, and sometimes, you know, they have some conversations and I say, you know what? They're just ignorant. I'm just going, you know, I sometimes say, you know, I don't want to mess up my edge up because, you know, this barber, one of these barbers I have there, mm-hmm. sometimes he can just be a pain in the butt. And it's easy to, you know, a lot of times, you know, us good men, if we are out there, we need to really be out there. And that was a call and check to myself and to other black men, because when I see black women having a fight for themselves or by themselves, and we oftentimes know what the right thing is, and we think that because we are not doing the bad thing, then that's enough. And it's not just enough not to do bad things. It's also important that we also call these things out and get some of our own people checked.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look across the pond of all these issues that came up this week, Kevin Hart's nonsense. Kevin Hart letting Ellen DeGeneres thinking she can speak on behalf of black LGBTQ people who were hit the hardest by Kevin Hart's jokes. Who does she think she is, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I see, you know, the situation with the mummers, and I see mostly black men on the timelines telling black women, telling black youth, telling young activists, telling everybody, oh, just shut up about it. It's not racist. It's not a big deal. It's just like, what? You know, why are we co-signing and silencing our own people who felt some type of way? We're co-signing white supremacy. We're co-signing misogyny. When the surviving R. Kelly documentary come out, I couldn't tell you how many people I just had to say, you need to shut up. You need to get some help. I'm blocking you. Shame on you.
Yeah, I kind of found myself doing that too.
It's baffling. And normally, you know, I have realized that in certain cases, I have been complicit, even in ways that I thought I was not. But this week and this year, I've had to get to the point where I've had to say enough, and not just so much that I will say it in articles and say it out loud and say, maybe I just say it as a public service announcement. This year, it's like, I'm going to go up to you. If you were doing this, if you're in that barbershop and you're literally trying to find ways to blame 14-year-old girls for sleeping with grown men who are locking them in houses and separating them from their families, something is wrong with you. And in our community, we always say, you know, there's an important thing I want to tell someone, because we always say, you know, we shouldn't let white people see us. We shouldn't allow for them to see our pain and trauma. I'm confused, because if we're getting to a point, if the point is to get to a point of healing and liberation, that means there must be an intervention. And when are we as black people actually going to have an intervention with these issues in our community? It seems like until other entities are looking at us and seeing us, somehow that's when people want to straighten up. That's when people care. And that's a shame. Because for 25 years, a man like R. Kelly has been doing this, and we have accepted it. Our ministers, the black church, has let this man come to their church and sing at funerals and gatherings. This, what has happened to these women, what continues to happen to a lot of black women, is that we continue to let them down. And we know these men in our communities. We know these men, and we let a lot of these men get away with it because we are not heroes. And so I am making a call to action on myself in 2019, and I'm calling on other black men, specifically in our community. Be a hero, because you know that creep in your circle. You know that man who holds on to those girls a little too tight. You know those men who make little snide remarks, and we just laugh it off and pass it off and act like it's not our place. Well, it is our responsibility. It is our place. And if we are not stepping up, then we are just a part of the problem. We're not the good boys. We're not the good men. We're not the good guys. If, you know, it's not enough just to say, well, I'm not raping people. Congratulations on being a human.
It's that, more that does than kind that. Of make you think of
you know,
Chris Rock
you
talking about you
that.
Want
it's
some...
not just about not doing the crime. You got to actually step up and actually, you know, start getting your brothers in check. Because when these men get called out, you know what I hear every time? And it's true. Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew he was little. I knew he had some problems. Then what did you do about it? And when I saw those managers, all those black men on that show, on that documentary saying, oh, yeah, he used to go to the high schools. I was like, why are you going to high schools? Why you didn't say anything? Why you didn't step up? And yet black women oftentimes step up, right? When you look at all of the movements that have been created by black women from Black Lives Matter, to all of the civil rights movements where there were black women on the front lines fighting for issues that impact us, we don't show it. We don't show it in return. And I'm tired of acting as though we can't. It can't be so many good men in a room when men like R. Kelly continue to get played on airwaves and cookouts and family gatherings, and we have tolerated that. We're not good men if we continue to be silent when these things happen. It's a check. It's a check. It's a year. This is a year where people are ready to unite and start fighting. And so, you know, the moment I saw this documentary, I was like, Patty Jackson, Deanna Williams, WRD, who are y'all still playing R. Kelly? And Patty Jackson responded to me. She's like, no, I've been not playing R. Kelly. And we got to keep, and it's not even just about R. Kelly, because there's R. Kellys out there in our own city. They're in our politics. They're in our networks. They're in our churches. We know men. We've heard stories, and I want to call them out so bad, but I won't. But there are stories I've heard, and maybe as a journalist, it's my job to start looking into them. Maybe I should start speaking up about dynasties and families in this city who have family members who have records of sexual abuse. It's time to start calling this stuff out. It's time to be a hero. Mm-hmm. And we need to stop acting like we don't know until the white people come. Or until the popos come, right? Because then all of a sudden, when white people start calling us out, it becomes a, what, huh? We should not be defined by the white gaze. We shouldn't only figure out how to be humans when white people see us or when our stuff is being aired on TV. It's a shame. The fact that it took a 6-hour documentary for 3 nights on TV for some people to wake up and see the light, it's a shame. It's a shame. And anybody who is more worried about how we're going to look to white people than how we're actually healing and protecting black girls and youth and young and women, you are part of the problem. Because that's exactly why the abuse continues. Because we're so caught up in whatever this image is or this reputation we think we have to white people that we don't tend to care how that is impacting black women and children. And so when we get out of ourselves, when we step outside of ourselves and stop caring about what they think or what they got to say, because whether we have a suit or do practice and fall in line, white supremacy is still going to exist, y'all. But what about the damage in our communities? We can fix that. We can address that. And no one else's gaze is going to impact that more so than what we do to each other and how we treat each other. That's so to the black man listening to this show, had that same energy you have about gun violence in your community, some of you, for sexual assault against black girls. Have that same energy you have about poverty and these other issues you love being the lead on. Have that same energy for the violence against youth and black youth in our communities. Have it, That same energy you have to be homophobic and talk about what your good Bible says about gay people, have that same energy in protecting black girls and youth from sexual violence. Have that same energy. And if you're not trying to have that conversation, if you're trying to be a Bishop Swain or whatever his name is, you're a part of the problem. Be a hero. Be a hero. Be a hero. I'm not going to tell you to picture your daughters or your sisters or your nieces, because to be quite honest, it shouldn't matter. I don't have a daughter. I think I have a niece, but I care about these issues because it's outside of myself. I'm not so selfish to only think it has to be relevant to me personally, because for so many black women who have fought for our lives, we didn't have to be their sons. We didn't have to be their nephews in order for them to care.
Well, here, because a lot of what you said made a whole lot of sense to me, because I kept having to deal with people who were saying, oh, well, when are they going to have those documentaries on the Catholic Church and all this other stuff? And I'm like, it was a whole movie that won an Academy Award about the Catholic Church. It's called Spotlight. You can rent it.
And you know what's interesting about that was someone I was talking to, a couple of good friends of mine, you know, who this is a point that about that. And what I've told people, to the men out there who tell us to go after the white men who do this, understand that basically by you telling us to put our energy into that, you're basically telling us to stop caring about black women who've been impacted by sexual violence. So here are some quick statistics. Most incidents in which sexual assault and abuse is happening to women, it's happening by someone that is of the same race and someone that's in close proximity to them. It's never the man lurking on the street grabbing a woman at night that no one knows. It's often someone close to them, a lover, a friend, a family friend. So by racial demographics and numbers, that means that more people who are getting sexually assaulted by a person of the same race than the opposite race. That being said, when you're telling black people who are focusing on sexual abuse against black victims to focus on the white men, you are basically prioritizing justice for white women who experience sexual abuse and assault over black women. And in society, we have been focused in programs to care about white women being sexually abused more than we do about black women, because every time they do experience rape or abuse, their stories get front page news and headlines. How is it that R. Kelly has had dozens of black women that we don't know, and they've never had a spotlight on national television on this level until now? I have seen and known about more women and victims of R. Kelly this weekend than I ever did any other time. And that's a failure on part of black media, the black press, and other people who have turned a blind eye to this issue and have not helped push these stories forward. So who's going to defend black victims and women? Because if the conversation is always going to be focused on the white men, then we know statistically that white men are mostly raping white women, which means that we're never going to prioritize black women that experience the sexual abuse and assault because it involves a black man. And to me, the whole question is that we need to understand that not all black men are the same. And we should not always keep caping for them at the expense of the trauma that black women and girls face in our country. We can't do that anymore. We can't keep saying, look at them, because when are we going to look at us? When are we going to ever look at us if we're always having to look at them? Because they're not the gold standard to me. To me, it's not, oh, well, you know, a white man did it, so it's cool. So, yeah, and we have a white man who's running this country and about to put us in an entire deficit. Is those goals?
Well,
is,
about
should
to.
We have told Obama that? Oh, Obama, well, you know, put us in it now, right? Obama, you know, oh, Trump did it, you should do it. What if we told our black leaders to model themselves after white people? That's probably why we have the problems we have now in our local government around gentrification. But that's another conversation for another day.
But here's also the thing that gets me when I hear this from black men in particular. Oh, the media is just trying to make us look bad. And I'm like, no, see, here's where the media makes you look bad. The media makes you look bad when it sees you running to defend R. Kelly. If you don't want to be put into that same basket, then get out of the basket. You know, stop saying, well, when are they going to do the document? And what really kills me is when women do it. I'm like, no, see, we have already failed these young black girls enough by the and I gotta hand it, you know, in addition to Dream Hampton doing this documentary, and it was great, and I'm glad that she did it. It probably wouldn't have been possible without the work of Jim DeRogatis, who was the only reporter that has been following this consistently. And he even said in an article in the Village Voice that the main reason why no one is paying attention to this is because it's black women. And the thing is, I had someone say to me earlier, over the weekend, oh, well, we can't pay attention to this. I might not get my tax refund. We got to focus on what's most important. And I'm like, so basically what you're saying to me is that black girls are less important than your tax refund. And I'm sorry, I call shenanigans on that. Yeah. I have to.
And it's time for, and it's really time for us as a community to start pulling these people in and telling these people to take a seat, telling these people to get a talk to a counselor, telling these people to get some real help, and really, you know, shutting that down and not letting that persist. You know, I saw it in my barbershop. I've seen it in certain social circles I'm in. I'm seeing this happen. It's time for us to start telling people. It's time for us to get our people together, ourselves.
Yes. Well, thanks a lot, Ernest, and congratulations on being named writer at large for the, for Philadelphia Magazine. That's great.
Thank you. It's been it's been already a very, as you can imagine, busy year, and you know, PABJ has been doing some good work thus far. You know, we'll, you know, if y'all want me to come on this week and update y'all with that, we're going to be talking to the Inquirer about their Mummers coverage.
Oh, okay, definitely.
And that's going to be actually the Friday afternoon, we're having that conversation with them. So I will update you all on Monday next week about it.
Okay, thanks. That's all the time we have. Have a good morning, everybody. And we'll see you tomorrow.
WWGB Philadelphia, 860 AM.
Now, more Jewish music with Barry Reisman.